Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. This week we will be talking about Phillips 66 Partners LP. Phillips 66 Partners owns, operates, develops, and acquires midstream assets. Midstream assets include activities such as transportation, processing, and storage. It also involves fractionation of refined petroleum products and natural gas liquids. As of 2019, Phillips 66 Partners had interest in more than 5,173 miles of pipeline with a gross capacity of 3,045 million barrels per day. It also owned more than 25 terminals and other storage assets. Phillips 66 Partners is a MLP, which stands for Master Limited Partnership. And what this means is Phillips 66 Partners is a combination of a corporation and a partnership. It provides the tax advantages of a partnership, and it provides the liquidity of a physically traded stock. Now that we understand Phillips 66 Partners' core business, which is its midstream operation, let's review the key ratios and analyze the fundamentals of this business so that we can better understand where this investment and the security may go in the future. So let's dive in and review Phillips 66 Partners LP. Hey guys, before reviewing the key ratios, let's spend a few minutes reviewing Phillips 66 Partners' Form 10-K, which is the annual report. And over here, we will get a better understanding of the business and the risks involved with investing in this company. So diving right in, the first we have is the organizational structure. Over here, the company states that as of December 31st, 2019, Phillips 66 represented about 74% of the limited partner's interest. The company states that we are a growth-oriented master limited partnership formed to own, operate, develop, and acquire primarily fee-based midstream assets. They also say that we primarily generate revenue by providing fee-based transportation, terminaling, processing, storage, and fractionation services to Phillips 66 and other customers. Additionally, they say that we have limited direct exposure to risks associated with fluctuating commodity prices, although these risks indirectly influence our activities and results of operations over the long term. After that, the company says that we have entered into long-term fee-based commercial agreements with Phillips 66 to provide transportation, terminaling, processing, storage, stevedoring, fractionation, and rail terminal services. They also specified that if Phillips 66 does not meet its minimum volume commitments, Phillips 66 pays us deficiency payments based on the calculations described in the agreements. We believe these agreements promote stable and predictable cash flows, and they are the source of a substantial portion of our revenue. So from what we have read so far, we understand that Phillips 66 Partners is a midstream business. Phillips 66 can be thought of as the parent company, and majority of the revenue that Phillips 66 Partners makes is by doing business with Phillips 66. We also saw that Phillips 66 Partners has limited direct exposure to fluctuating commodity prices, and it has stable cash flows due to the way its contracts are set up. Let's quickly review the projects that Phillips 66 Partners is involved in. First, they talk about the Gary Oak Pipeline, where they say we have a 42.25% effective ownership in the pipeline system. For the same pipeline system, they also say that we have a 25% ownership in the terminal. Phillips 66 Partners also specifies that we are increasing storage capacity at Clemens Caverns from 9 million barrels to 16.5 million barrels. Next, they talk about the construction of the C2G pipeline, which is a 16-inch ethane pipeline. After that, they talk about the Sweeney to Pasadena pipeline expansion project, where they would be providing additional naphtha offtake. After that, the company talks about its projects associated with the Lake Charles refinery. At the end, they specify the Bayou Bridge pipeline segment from Lake Charles to St. James, Louisiana. They say that this pipeline transports crude oil from Nederland, Texas to St. James, Louisiana, and they own a 40% interest in this pipeline joint venture. Next, talking about the commercial and other agreements with Phillips 66. The company says that we have entered into multiple commercial agreements with Phillips 66, which include minimum volume commitments and inflation escalators. These agreements are the source of a significant portion of our revenue. Under these long-term fee-based agreements, we provide transportation, terminaling, processing, storage, stevedoring, and fractionation services to Phillips 66, and Phillips 66 commits to provide us with minimum quarterly volume of crude oil, refined petroleum products, and NLG, or minimum monthly capacity or storage fees. As far as the competition goes, the company says that we will not face significant competition from other pipelines, terminaling, storage facilities, rail racks, fractionation, and processing units for Phillips 66's transportation and terminaling requirements to and from
the refineries we support. So what all this means is that Phillips 66 and Phillips 66 partners are tied at the hip. One is dependent on the other. And the majority of the revenue that Phillips 66 partners makes comes from Phillips 66. Now let's look at some of the important risks involved with investing in Phillips 66 partners. The first risk factor is that we may not generate sufficient distributable cash flow to sustain the payments of distributions to our unit holders at their current level. What this means is that if your incentive to purchase Phillips 66 partners is solely to get a dividend payout, then the company warns you that those dividend payouts would not be sustainable because those payouts depend on the cash flows that the company generates. And with the fluctuating cash flow, the dividend payouts are going to fluctuate as well. Phillips 66 Partners then talks about what determines those cash flows. And the first is the volume. The more volume that the company transports, the more money they're going to make. The second is the fees and rates. If you're going to charge more for the volume, then you're going to make more money. The third is the commodity prices. What they say on page 57 in regards to the commodity prices is that they have a certain contracts where the customers would pay them a fee, but that fee would be determined by what the commodity prices of crude oil may be. The fourth is the prevailing economic condition, including commodity prices. At the end, Phillips 66 Partners says that any failure to pay distributions at expected levels could result in loss of investor confidence and decrease in the market value of our common units. The next risk factor is that our commercial agreement with Phillips 66 allows Phillips 66 to suspend, reduce, or terminate its obligations in certain circumstances. Any such suspension, reduction, or termination could have a materially adverse effect on our financial condition, results of operations, cash flow, and ability to make distributions to our unit holders. Now, this is a big risk because Phillips 66 is the biggest customer that Phillips 66 Partners has. So if Phillips 66 suspends, reduces, or terminates its agreement with Phillips 66 Partners, then that is certainly a big, big risk involved with this investment. Phillips 66 Partners provides an example with this risk factor. They say that examples of such events include Phillips 66's determination to suspend refining operations at one of its refineries with which our assets are associated, either permanently or for a period that will continue for at least 12 months. Now let's focus on the risks inherent in investing in Phillips 66 Partners. The first is that our partnership agreement requires that we distribute all our available cash, which could limit our ability to grow and make acquisitions. Over here, Phillips 66 Partners states that we're unable to finance our own growth externally. Our cash flow distribution policy may significantly impair our ability to grow. Additionally, they say we may increase the risk that we will be unable to maintain or increase our per unit distribution level. Over here, Phillips 66 Partners also states that they may issue more units in order to generate the cash to make acquisitions and grow, which essentially dilutes your interest if you are an existing unit holder. And we will take a look at this dilution when we talk about the key ratios later down in the video. At the end, Phillips 66 Partners also states that additional commercial borrowing or other debt to finance our growth strategy would result in increased interest expense, which in turn may reduce the amount of cash that we have available to distribute to our unit holders. Next risk factor is that our general partners and its affiliates, including Phillips 66, have conflict of interest with us, and they may favor their own interests to our detriment and that of our unit holders. Additionally, we may have no control over the business decisions and operations of Phillips 66, and Phillips 66 is under no obligation to adopt a business strategy that favors us. So what this means is the general partner, who is Phillips 66, may make decisions that are best for Phillips 66, but in doing so, it may hurt Phillips 66 partners. On the plus side, since we know that Phillips 66 has the majority interest and owns about 74% of the units, we would expect Phillips 66 to make sure that the decisions that it makes are in the best interest for itself, which would include the retail unit holders like you and I if we were to invest in Phillips 66 Partners. The next risk factor ties into what we just talked about, and the risk factor states, our partnership agreement replaces our general partner's fiduciary duty to holders of our common units with contractual standards governing its duties. After that, Phillips 66 Partners states that unit holders have very limited voting rights, and if they are dissatisfied, they cannot remove our general partners without its consent. those were the biggest risks involved with investing in Phillips 66 partners. Now let's dive in and look at the key ratios. Hey guys, so I'm on Morningstar for Phillips 66 partners under key ratios, looking at the financials. The first on the list is revenue. All the numbers here are in millions of dollars. Back in 2011, the revenue was 76 and it grew to 1,126 as of 2019. So we can see that for the past few years, the revenue has been trending upwards. Similarly, operating income, which is simply the income that the company generates from its core business. Back in 2011, the operating income was 38 million. And as of 2019, the operating income was about 500 million. So we can clearly see that the operating income has been increasing as well. Next is the net income. Net income is the bottom line of the income statement. And what this number tells us is the amount of money that's left with the company once it pays all the expenses and obligations. Back in 2011, the net income was 39, and that number grew to 923 million in 2019. So we can clearly see that net income has been trending upwards as well. As far as dividends go, we can see that back in 2013, the dividend payout was $0.15. And as of 2019, the payout was $3.40 per unit. If we look at the payout ratio, which is simply the ratio of dividends paid out to the company's earnings, we can see that it has been pretty high. The ratio ranged from 75% to 95%. This high payout ratio should not be surprising because we know that Phillips 66 Partners contractually has to pay out majority of its earnings to its unit holders. Next is the book value per share. Book value is the number that we get when we subtract all the liabilities from the company's assets. Back in 2013, the book value was about $8 per share. It increased to about $19 per share back in 2018. And then we saw a dip in 2019, and the book value right now is about $12 per share. Looking at the shares outstanding, which is synonymous to units outstanding, we can see that back in 2011, Phillips 66 Partners had 70 million shares outstanding. And that number has grown to 233 million shares outstanding. Yes, this increase in shares outstanding is diluting the existing shareholders' ownership. But as we just read, Phillips 66 Partners has no other way to generate cash in order to make acquisitions and grow. And in my opinion, equity financing is a much better option than taking on debt where you have to pay on interest in order to grow your business. So this is not unexpected for the company. It is just a way for the company to get some more money so that it can make investments and grow the business. Looking at the free cash flow, and the free cash flow is simply operating cash flow minus capital spending. We can see that the free cash flow was negative in 2014, 2016, and 2019. And if we look at the reason why this cash flow was negative, we see that it was because the capital spending, so the projects that Phillips 66 Partners may have invested its money in, was growing. So back in 2014, we had a higher number in its capital spending. Same in 2016, where the capital spending number was larger than the operating cash flow. And the same situation in 2019, where the capital spending was greater than the operating cash flow, which made the free cash flow turn negative. However, if we just focus on the core business, the cash flow that the core business generates, we can see that the operating cash flow has always been positive and growing. And a growing operating cash flow is definitely something we want to see in a business. Next, let's look at the profitability of investing in Phillips 66 Partners. First is the return on equity. The return on equity number gives you an idea of what kind of return can you expect on your equity. So the money that you invest within the company, what kind of return can you expect on that shareholder equity? And we can see that back in 2011, the return was about 30%. And throughout the years, the return has always been in double digits, except in 2013, when the return on equity was a little shy of 8%. For the trailing 12 months, the return on equity is about 34%. So this is certainly a very respectable return on equity. Next is the return on invested capital. The return on invested capital gives you an idea of how good the management is at investing your capital and getting a return on that investment. As we can see, throughout the years, the return on invested capital has always been positive. The lowest number we saw was back in 2013, when the return was a little shy of 8%. For the trailing 12 months, the return on invested capital was about 17%. Finally, let's look at the interest coverage. Interest coverage gives you an idea of how many times can the company pay its interest using its current earnings. Whenever we invest in a company, we always want to see the interest coverage ratio to be at least a 5 or greater. That tells us that the company has agility, has flexibility to pay its obligations using its earnings. The interest coverage ratio for Phillips 66 Partners for the trailing 12 months is about 10 times. So this is definitely a good number and something we want to see in a company. Next, let's look at the financial health, specifically focusing on the current ratio. The current ratio is simply the ratio of the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the current ratio to be at least a 1.0. That tells us that the company has enough current assets to pay off its current obligations. Having a current ratio less than 1 for Phillips 66 Partners makes sense because we just read about this, how contractually Phillips 66 Partners has to pay out most of its earnings. So it can barely hold on to any cash, and cash at times can be the biggest driver to enhance the company's current ratio. So I wouldn't be too worried about the few years where Phillips 66 Partners had a current ratio of less than 1. As of 2019, the current ratio was a 2.08. Looking at the financial leverage, we can see that back in 2011, the financial leverage was about 1.03, and that has increased to 1.46 as of 2019. We can see that Phillips 66 Partners was a lot more levered back in 2014-2015 timeframe, and that financial leverage ratio has dropped down. A 2.46 financial leverage for Phillips 66 Partners is not something I would be too worried about because we just saw that the company has enough earnings to support those interest payments on its debt obligations. And finally, looking at the debt to equity ratio, this is simply a ratio of the company's debt to its shareholders' equity. We can see that the debt to equity ratio back in 2014 was about a 6, and it has decreased to 1.23 as of 2019. Ideally, we want the debt to equity ratio to be less than 1. However, a 1.23 times debt to equity ratio is not bad. Now let's look at the current valuations of the company. Over here, we will be comparing the ratios of Phillips 66 Partners to that of S&P 500. S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States, so it helps us get an idea of how the top 500 companies pair out to Phillips 66 Partners. The first is the price to earnings ratio. Phillips 66 Partners has a PE of about 6 as compared to S&P 500, whose PE is about 26. Second is the price to book value. Phillips 66 Partners has a price to book of 1.9 as compared to S&P 500, whose price to book is 3.6. Third is the price to sales. Phillips 66 Partners has a price to sales ratio of 5.3 as compared to S&P 500, whose price to sales ratio is 2.5. Fourth is price to cash flow. Phillips 66 Partners has price to cash flow of 5.6 as compared to S&P 500, which is at 14.9. And lastly, the dividend yield. Phillips 66 Partners has a dividend yield of 14.3% as compared to S&P 500, whose dividend yield is a little shy of 2%. So apart from the price to sales ratio, all the other ratios tell us that Phillips 66 Partners is undervalued when we compare it to the aggregate 500 companies of the United States of America. Hey guys, let's look at the key ratios for Phillips 66. Phillips 66 is the general partner of Phillips 66 Partners, and majority of the revenue that Phillips 66 Partner makes comes from Phillips 66. So it's important for us to review the key ratios for the company that does the majority of the business with Phillips 66 Partners. So let's dive in and look at the ratios for Phillips 66. The first is the revenue, which is the top line of the company. We can see that the revenue was increasing from 2010 to 2012, and then it was decreasing from 2012 through 2016, and then it was increasing again for a couple of years, and then it has been decreasing. And the recent decline has primarily been due to the slump that oil and gas sector has been in. Next is the net income, which is the bottom line of the company. Over the past 10 years, the net income has always been positive, except for the trailing 12 months when the net income turned negative. This was primarily due to the decrease in demand for refined crude oil products. We can see that the operating cash flow for the company has always been positive. Next is the free cash flow. We can see that Phillips 66's free cash flow has always been positive, except in 2014 and 2015. This was primarily because the capital spending exceeded what the company's operating cash flow was in those years. Quickly looking at the profitability of the company, we can see that the return on equity and the return on invested capital, both of these ratios, for the most part, have been in double digits over the years and positive. We can see that for the trailing 12 months, all the numbers here are negative. This is because the earnings were negative, so all our ratios would be negative. However, I believe that the negative earnings is going to be temporary, since once the demand for crude oil picks up, we will be seeing Phillips 66 begin to profit and earnings recover as well. We can see that the interest coverage over the past 10 years has always been greater than a 5, and that tells us that the company is not over-leveraged and can pay off its current obligations. Quickly looking at the financial health of the company, we can see that the current ratio has always been greater than a 1, which is something we want to see in a company. Next is the financial leverage. We can see that back in 2010, the financial leverage was a 1.73, as compared to 2019 when it was 2.36. We can see that overall, the financial leverage has stayed steady. This goes to show that Phillips 66 is not trying to borrow more money in order to grow or expand its business. Next is the debt to equity ratio. We can see that for the past 10 years, the debt to equity ratio has been less than a 0.5. For the latest quarter, we can see that Phillips 66 may have taken on some more debt. This move would make sense because it had a shortfall in its earnings. So in order to compensate for those decreased earnings, it wouldn't be surprising if the company took on a little bit more debt to fulfill its obligations. However, Phillips 66 is in no way over-leveraged and can certainly pay off the debt that it is accumulating right now. Hey guys, now let's wrap it all up. We started off by looking at Phillips 66 Partners' 10K annual report. In the annual report, we saw that Phillips 66 Partners generates its operational revenue via its midstream business. We also looked at the risk factors, some of which include the fact that Phillips 66 is going to look after the operations of Phillips 66 Partners, so you as a unit holder do not necessarily have the same voting rights as you would in other corporations. We also saw that Phillips 66 could potentially make certain decisions that would harm Phillips 66 Partners. And lastly, we saw that Phillips 66 Partners generates most of its revenue from Phillips 66, so it is dependent on Phillips 66 for its operational revenue. After that, we looked at Phillips 66 Partners' key ratios. We saw that the return on equity and return on invested capital were phenomenal. The operational revenue and the dividend payouts had been increasing every year. And more importantly, the interest coverage for Phillips 66 Partners was greater than a 5. Next, we looked at the financial health of the company, primarily focusing on the financial leverage and debt to equity. We saw that both the measures were marginal, financial leverage being a 2.5 and the debt to equity being a 1.2. Ideally, we want the financial leverage to be as low as possible and the debt to equity to be less than 1. However, the numbers that Phillips 66 Partners has are better than its competitors. All of these ratios point out that Phillips 66 Partners is going to be around. And more importantly, when we looked at Phillips 66, the general partner, we saw that it was a financially stable company. And what this means is that if the customer, Phillips 66, is going to be around for a long time, it is fair for us to assume that Phillips 66 Partners will be around as well in order to support Phillips 66's ongoing operations. As far as deriving the intrinsic value of Phillips 66 Partners go, it is hard for us to determine the value using the traditional discounted free cash flow DCF analysis or expected rate of return calculations because the free cash flow for Phillips 66 Partners has not been positive and growing. So whatever answer we may get using the DCF or expected rate of return calculation is not going to be an accurate picture of the intrinsic value of the company. So in this situation, we would have to fall back on the traditional methods of valuation that Benjamin Graham, who was Warren Buffett's professor, talked about in his books, Intelligent Investor and the Security Analysis. Benjamin Graham said that we enhance our margin of safety when we buy stocks with PE that is less than 12. In the case of Phillips 66 Partners, the PE ratio is about a 6. So we already have a greater margin of safety with this investment. Next, if we look at the dividend payouts, which was about $3.4 per share, if we were to purchase the security at $24.4 per share and hold the security for the next 7 years, we would break even. And finally, I wanted to read a quick paragraph from the book Security Analysis by Benjamin Graham, where he talks about how a security analyst should look at a security and invest. And over here, Benjamin Graham states that security analyst selects the exceptional cases in which the market price falls far short of reflecting intrinsic value, either through neglect or because of undue emphasis laid upon unfavorable factors that are probably temporary. So what Benjamin Graham is saying is that the security analyst is going to find better investments in securities that are temporarily depressed because of the current market conditions. And here's what we know. Philips 66 Partners' customer is financially stable, and we know that Philips 66 is going to be around for a long time. That means that there is going to be demand for Philips 66 Partners. Philips 66 Partners is going to have steady revenue. And lastly, we are buying the security at a depressed price where the price to earnings is about a 6 as compared to the S&P 500, which is sitting at about 25. So even though we cannot find the exact number for the intrinsic value of Philips 66 Partners, we can be fairly certain that at the current valuation of $24.4 per share, this investment is undervalued. That is all I had for you guys this week. Hopefully you found this video interesting and helpful. Please do like, share, comment, and subscribe to my channel. Thank you.